The guy that was up here this morning looked a lot like me, didn't he? He was filthy. Clothes stunk. So we jacked him up, drove a new guy under him, and here I am. My name's Larry Scott, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm free this morning, or this afternoon, whatever time it is. It's morning where I'm from, so good morning. All right, Sammy wrapped up step eight. No, she didn't. She wrapped up step five. Bear with me. And after you've done step five, you do this fifth step prayer, and it says, we thank God from the bottom of his from our heart that we know him better. And then it says, we take this book down from our shelf. I sponsor guys who will actually go home, take the book, put it on a shelf, reach up and take it down. We're that exact about this work. I know a guy in Tennessee, the book says we write a fourth step in black and white. He actually told me that if someone showed up at his house with a yellow legal pad and blue ink, he made him go home and rewrite it. That's a little extreme. But my guys put the book on the shelf, take it down, and it says that we carefully read the first five proposals, one through five. And we ask, and this could be you're asking yourself or God for inspiration. It says, we ask if we've omitted anything. Because we're building this archway, picture if you will, an arch through which we're going to pass free people. And it says, are we trying to build this foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Chris alluded to it last night. We have the book calls it a cement. The first part of that cement is the common problem. That's why we're here. And we have a common solution. And that solution is found here in the first 164 pages. The solution for me will work for the women, the men. It doesn't matter. It's a common solution. And we can absolutely agree. Those are promises from the book. And it says, have we tried to make mortar without sand? And then on page 76, it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step six. Step six isn't a working step. I mean, you look at it, and it starts out, the first word is were. Past tense. Entirely ready to do what? Have God remove all these defects of character. The way it was explained to me and the way I hook up with it is it says, it's the only time I reference this book. Nothing wrong with this book, but the directions are in this other book. It says, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. We're entirely ready. You've sat with another person for a piece of time. My longest fourth step or fifth step with a guy was 17 hours. Defense attorney out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and he wore me out. But at the end of it, he had admitted time and time and time and time and time and time again how dishonest, how fearful, how selfish, how self-centered, self-seeking, and how inconsiderate he had been throughout the entirety of his life. So my opinion and the way I hook up with this were entirely ready, he has hit a bottom with those behaviors. If you hadn't hit a bottom with your alcoholism and those behaviors, you wouldn't be here today. You'd be out there just not drinking. But we've hit a bottom with that, so we come in here to find the help. We're entirely ready. That's the question you got to ask yourself. And it says, the book has only got two paragraphs on two steps. Wilson, later on in years, in the 50s, he came back and he wrote this. He said, whoa, wait a minute. There's a lot more meat to those two steps. I need to give it a little more gas. So he printed a better version of what these steps mean in this book. So you pray. You say, if we still cling to something, we'll not let go. We ask God to be willing to let it go. Step six. And then it goes, when I'm ready, I say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I love the way my friend Kip Collins puts it. All the character flaws that I walked in here with are still with me. I talked about it this morning. They're with me. They're convenient. They're familiar. It's easier for me to tell you a lie than it is for the truth, because that's the way I live. It's easy if I walk into a convenience store and I'm looking for a pack of gum or a pack of mints and there's a line people buying lottery. It's so easy for me to pick that box of mints up, stick it in my pocket, and sashay out the door. I'm a thief. It takes effort for me to wait and have that acceptance and tolerance. I don't use the P word. Man, patience is a bitch. But I use acceptance and tolerance of those that are wanting to gamble, and I wait, knowing I got to be at the meeting at 8, to pay for the mints. So, all of me, the good and the bad, my character flaws are just below the surface, and they're so familiar, they're so convenient, I can pull one out and use it. A lot of people don't know it. I do. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that what? Stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to you. If I'm still living in those, on all that stuff that we discovered back in 4 and 5, I'm not going to be very effective, am I? I'm passing along the mess instead of the message. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. And then it's got the word amen. We've completed that step. Now we need more action. Y'all thought we'd let up on that, didn't you? Well, this comes out of the chapter into action, not into thinking. We're still doing the work here. And it says we look at steps 8 and 9. Samantha covered your 8-step list. When you made your 4th step, you got the grudge list, you've got the people you hurt in your sex, and you got a list of people and things that you harmed in a harms inventory. So 8 is done. My experience, I sit down with my guy sit down with me, and we go through that, because at this point, I know the cause of these resentments and these harms and these sexual things. And we make a list, and what I do, I'm not going to draw it, it takes too much time. There's 4 columns, got it from Joe and Charlie. Now, the ones that I'm willing to do now, those are usually the tough ones, like mom, your best friend. All those are going to go, oh, Larry, it wasn't that bad. So we go out and we do the ones that we can do now. Now also means those that are convenient. I sponsor a lot of guys that are from outside Atlanta. They're from other states. And those guys that they've got to go back to their home and make the amends, they go in the next column, which is later. Then there's that 3rd column. It's maybe. I'm not sure if I'm going to make amends to these people yet. And then you got that 4th column that's never. I'm never talking to that son of a bitch. Screw him. I don't know what I'm going to amend. He hurt me too. She hurt me too. But what happens, it's a trickery. I love this. Because when you get done with the now column, the maybes move over. No, the laters move over. The maybes move over. And the microphone. And then the nevers move over to maybes. You see where it's going here? Because what happens, once you've got experience in that 9-step amends process, you realize it's not the big booger bear that you thought it was. Now, I'm not going to stand up here and insult your intelligence saying that, oh, the 9th step is a walk in the park, because it's not. I've been thrown out of people's offices. Why? Because I harmed those people to a degree that they could not find forgiveness. And it's okay. It's not about how they take the amends, how they receive it. It's how I carry the amends, how I deliver it. Because it's my side of the street that I got to get cleaned off. I want to be free. I'm not going to waste a lot of time on this because we've got all sorts of amends. I mean, we got Home Depot back home. I don't know if you got them in this country, but there were years that I would walk in and I would steal something that was worth $50. I'd take it back to another Home Depot, get the money for it, and go get what I had to have. Make sense? So I harmed who? Did I harm Home Depot? Yeah, but did I harm you? You betcha. Because if enough dope fiend alcoholics like me are going in there doing the same thing, prices are going to go up. They're going to have to buy more security cameras. I'm harming a lot of people by my behaviors. There's one I'm going to share with you, and I'm not sharing this as a suggestion. It's my experience. I have a sister-in-law. I harmed my brother and his family for years in a lot of ways. She married up, it's my opinion. She came from a lower class kind of family, and she married him, and this guy's got enough money to burn a wet dog. I mean, he's got big cash. So she marries into this family, and she's observing my behaviors back in the day, and I'm running with her oldest son. We're out shooting dope, drinking liquor, wrecking cars, doing what we do. And she blamed me for that. He caught the bullet too. He's got the genetic thing, but she doesn't know that. She lives in a world of ignorance and misunderstanding, so it's my fault that he's a dope fiend alcoholic, right? Well, what she did is she drove a wedge between me and my family. She would not allow me to come to that home. She did not, and this is my fault. I'm not blaming her. I created this, but what it did is it divided me from my family that I love dearly. My sick mind, I wanted to do that amends with her face to face, by God, my way. And when I got done, I wanted to say, oh, Larry, it's okay. Come over Sunday, I'm going to fry some chicken and we'll have fun like we always did. I knew damn good and well that wasn't going to happen because I would see her at family events, reunions and funerals and that, and I could not approach her. She would not allow it. 16 years passed. I'm dying inside. All my amends were made. Her whole family, some of them went well, some of them didn't go so well, but they were done, and she's hanging out there, eating my guts out, renting all this space. So I called my sponsor, years, and I said, Bill, I don't know what to do. He said, write a letter. Nah, because I wanted it done my way. Finally, 16 years, I went, God, this bitch is killing me. So I called Bill. He says, write the letter. I said, okay. So I write the letter, two paragraphs, very to the point, very simple. I called my sponsor. I read the letter. He said, mail it. Now, here's what happened, my experience. I walked out of my house, licked the envelope, put a stamp on it, opened the door, very, very vital, stuck the letter in, shut the door. Everything's still cool. But here's the trick, guys. When I raised the flag on that mailbox, boom, I was free. Because here's why. I had no expectations of fried chicken on Saturday. I had no expectations she was going to call me up and say, oh, Larry, you're the greatest guy in the world. Never happened, but my expectation level had been diminished to a point to where I'm okay with me. I've run into her since. She still won't let me approach her, but I'm cool with that. Do you see where I'm going here? It ain't about their freedom. They don't care if you ever make amends. Some of them do, but it's about us being free. I don't know what you want. I want all the goodies that are in this book. There's hundreds of promises in here. I want them all. Typically, I want them now. And I'm going to go into this financial thing. The book says that many alcoholics owe money. Well, blood, who'd have thunk it? Well, the financial thing, the book lays out some general ideas. They're not going to pinpoint your situation. They might, but they give a general idea of the way we approach this process. But the best idea that it gives is we approach these people with money in hand. And it says, making the best deal we can. I'm going to give you an example. This little guy, Hunter, I talked about this morning, 98 days. He met with his dad Wednesday night. This is so cool. Hunter, he and I had walked through the amends process with his family. He says, I calculate that I owe them about $3,000. I said, cool. So he goes to meet his dad, and he says, Dad, I'm really sorry about all the money I manipulated and stole and da-da-da-da-da. My calculation says it's about $3,000. His father has his laptop, and he does this. He goes, Well, let's see here. He says, my calculations is it's more like 7. So Hunter's got a blank contract that we drew out. And the contract says, you know, Dad, I Hunter Dean, estimate that I owe blank amount of money, and I plan to pay back X amount over X amount of time. So they filled in the blanks. They both signed it. And his dad called me the next day. He says, I don't know what you did with my kid. He says, I've been paying for treatment centers for years for this kid. He says, what'd you do to him? I said, I didn't do anything. I showed him what I did. I took him. I showed him what I did. And God intervened. Who'd have thunk it? So he arranged the best deal he could. He will stick to that deal, and guess what? God's got him. There's so many different forms of amends, and the last one I'm going to touch on is that sex thing. It says that, say that we've been unfaithful to the number one. Do we tell them? My rule is no, because you're creating yet more harm. And if I lose you here, stop me, because this is very key, especially the women. Why would I go back and share an infidelity with the woman that I profess to love to get the bullshit guilt off of me to make me feel better and harm her more? The book says we think not. And I don't know about you. My life has been nothing but thievery and sexual misconduct. And I stand here today free, telling you that for 22 years, that is not my story anymore. Not at my hand. It's from the intervention of a power greater than me. At the end of this step, do you guys read the night step promises in your meetings? You do. Is that a yes? Good. Thank God I have an opinion up at the podium. I have an opinion about that. I don't know why the fellowship chose those promises to read at meetings, because my experience was I came in here and I'm snaking and shaking and they're reading all this stuff. There's 12 of this and 12 of that. And then they read this thing and it says, you're going to be amazed before you're halfway through. And I'm going, really? Halfway through with what? The meeting? This coffee? Halfway home? I had no idea. You got new people coming in here. They don't know what the hell that means. And where do you find it? All the way back 80-something pages into the text. Just my opinion. Because the book, that we've already read about 150 promises up to this point, if you've taken your people through this. Spiritual life's not a theory. We have to live it. Thank God. Each morning in prayer and meditation, we ask our Creator to show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. At the end of that step, or at the end of the work, it says we should, and this is some clear-cut direction. When you're out there making these direct amends, is I look you in the eye because I need to see how you're receiving the amends that I'm bringing. Internet, bullshit. Phone calls, bullshit, because people are on the other end of the phone going, yeah, whatever. Whatever. I need to see the way you're receiving this. So from that day forward, I know how to where our relationship really is. You with me here? Direct amends. Just the way I do it. It says that we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, humble, without being servile or scraping. Do you know do you understand what servile means? I'm big on words. I love words. Love these little dictionaries. I could spew out what I think it means, but here we go. Slave-like in attitude. Submissive, feeling less than. When I got here, I'm a shoe guy. I step up in front of you, I could tell you what color your shoes were, but I had no idea what your face looked like. So that's servile. Today I can stand on my own 2 feet, and I can look you in the eye. And that's one of the promises from the book. And it says scraping. Scraping is irritating, harsh, quarrelsome, aggravating. You walk up and you go, here's your damn money. It's not the way it's done. That's scraping. So if you do that, we come to the ninth step promises. This is what happens after you have embarked on the ninth step process. Bear with me because I'm going to break this down a little bit, because I don't know what happens for you when they read that or what or how it works. But when I hear those things in a meeting, I hear because you hear it over and over again. But do we ever pause to think about what they're saying here? If we are painstaking is busting your ass going to any length to get this done, about this phase of our development, the ninth step phase, you're going to be amazed before you're halfway through with this process. You're going to know a new freedom. That's what I'm looking for. And a new happiness. I didn't know what the hell happiness was when I got here. There ain't a lot of happiness in a dumpster or cardboard box in the cold. We're not to regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. My past, if I can draw from my past, it helps catapult me into a future because I remember where I came from. I never want to forget that. You'll hear about that tonight. December 31st, 1987 was a... It's going to say, it says we're going to comprehend the word serenity. Yeah. I saw it in you, but now I'm beginning to comprehend it because I'm doing the work. And I'm going to know peace. I know what that is. Peace and freedom for me are about the same thing. There's nothing inside me rolling around and driving me crazy anymore, beating me over the head. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we're going to see how our experience can benefit others. I run into Larry Scotts on a regular basis. I bet that's your story too. Guys will come up to you and you look at them and they're shaking and snaking and you go, "Ooh, boy, this is going to be a rough one." And you start digging into the work and you find out they're just like you. Damn. I got this 22-year-old kid. The only difference is he's got hair. He's a little taller. And he's got youth on his side, but our paths are the same. He thought, he drank, he used, he did the same things I did, and he's facing the same consequences. I love this kid. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity, that's that third column of the inventory, that self-esteem stuff, will disappear. We're going to lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. What can I do to make your life better? That's what it's all about. Self-seeking will slip away. I'll give you a ride to the damn meeting, but will you put gas in my car? Yeah, I'll get you a coffee, but you're going to owe me one. Selfless. We walked in here the most selfish sons of bitches on the planet. The goal is to become selfless. And I'm going to go ahead and beat this horse right now and get it out of the way. There are people all over the world that email me or call me because of this. One lady in Scottsdale, Jeannie, is threatening to put up a website called the Larry Scott Shopping Cart website. You know, you go to the grocery or you go someplace and they loan you a shopping cart, right? You with me? Y'all got those over here? And you go in and you buy a 24-pack of toilet paper and you buy a case of dog food or Coca-Cola and you fill this thing up. Well, they loaned you that cart so that you can have ease in getting those goods back to your car. It's not your cart. They loaned it to you. And here's what we do. We get it to the car. We unload all the stuff. And then here's the look. We go. And then we jack the wheels up on the curb. You ever do that? They loaned you the damn cart. The best thing you can do is take it back. I don't care if it's snowing. I don't care if it's cold. I don't care if it's raining. They loan you the cart. In the United States, we got these little cart corrals. They're convenient. I've seen people park next to one and leave the damn cart in the middle of the parking space. Take the damn cart back. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. If you ever go on I got a Facebook page, go on there. You'll see me pushing shopping carts in Jamaica. I got Charlie Yow sitting in a car, in a shopping cart wearing a Harley helmet and a Harley shirt. Big guy. Anyway, take the damn shopping carts back. Our whole attitude, when we come here, we're trying to change our attitudes about three things. The book uses the word attitude throughout. Our attitudes about ourselves, we're not really pieces of dirt. Our attitude about our fellows, because I don't think you like me, therefore I don't like you. Flawed thinking. And the third attitude is about our Creator, God as you understand God. Change of attitude. It says our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Life ain't out to get me, man. Life ain't changed. Just because Larry Scott quit pouring drugs and alcohol in his body, I haven't, you know, life ain't changed. Life still deals me the same hand it dealt me back then. I'm just dealing with it raw today. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. I don't have fear of you today. Chris knows this. I live in economic insecurity on a regular basis because I'm self-employed. But the trade-off is worth it because when it's rolling, I'm free. But when it's not and I'm in financial insecurity, I understand that God's there and he's going to come and grab me and he's going to pull me through. He always has, and I have undying faith that he always will. I call my sponsor and he says, "How are you doing?" I said, "Well, you know, I don't know if I can pay my bills this month. I know God's coming. I just wish the hell he'd look at his wristwatch." He says, "God made watches. He doesn't need to look at them." That's my guy. So I have economic insecurity. I just don't have the fear of it because my faith has overrode the fear. Make sense? We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. When I get that letter from the Internal Revenue Service that says, "Hey, you got back taxes?" I call them. I don't shut my drapes and go pull the covers over my head. I deal with it. We'll suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. It doesn't say gradually. It says suddenly. Why? Because you've done the work to this point. That's why these promises are here. And then the early fellowship, the authors of the book ask the early fellowship, says, "Are these extravagant promises?" And they respond by saying, "We think not." I don't know about in this country. In our country, we have that chanting thing going on. But they're not talking to you. They're talking to the early fellowship. And it says, "They are being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them." Again, I've never done one of anything. I've never had a little bit of anything. I want it all. I like doubles, triples. Gimme, 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 gimme. My favorite thing is more. So why the hell would I play with this when you've promised me a freedom beyond my wildest imagination? Why would I just dibble with it? I've been screwing with Henrik here ever since. He's rolling these little tiny pin-sized cigarettes. Roll a fatty, man. Get it out of the way. Let's get this thing done. You know, I mean, come on. You can't use your little machine, but hell, man, spin it up. Let's go. I used to take double-wide papers, man. I'd have a spliff, you know what I'm saying? Let's go. I don't like a little bit of nothing. I mean, I want it all. All right, so that wraps up step 9. And it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests the fellowship will tell you that 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. My book doesn't say that. My book says they're growth steps. I don't want to do this. I don't want to get done with 9 and get to right here and just go like this. I want to keep doing this. I want to keep rocketing. It says we continue to take personal inventory and continue. They use the word continue 4 times in this paragraph. It says continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously, not kind of dragging your ass, vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So you're out there making the amends, but you're already in 10. You're already in 10. You don't finish your 9th step amends before you start this 10th step process. You know, you hurt somebody out there and you're going, "Well, I'm not to 10 yet, so I'll just come back and see you later." No, now. Now. It says this is not an overnight matter. There's a time frame. It should continue for how long? For a lifetime. This is the way we're going to live from now on. The book is now going to take you through the majority of the steps. And here you go. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Step 4. When these crop up, not if, when these crop up, we pray. Step 6 and 7. We ask God at once, not tonight, to remove them. If I come out there right now and I walk up to Smarty with a .38 and I shoot him in the foot, are you going to wait till like 8 o'clock tonight to go get that taken care of? No, you're going to do it now. So if you're going through some emotional pain, why the hell would you wait until 8 o'clock meeting to go in and throw up in the meeting with that crap? You know, it says, when these crop up, we ask God to remove them. And then step 5, we discuss them with someone immediately. Step 8 and 9, we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Step 10, Then we resolutely, no, step 12, I'm sorry. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Step 12. See how they just went through those in half a paragraph? So we're continuing to live this way of life. And there's a promise. Love and tolerance of others is our code. The love part I got, I can love the hell out of you. Tolerating you, boy, that's an order. Kind of like that trust and rely thing. And it goes on, it says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. And here they're assuming, says, for by this time, sanity will have returned. Insanity was our problem, wasn't it? We will seldom be interested in liquor. These are 10th step promises. But right back on the heels of the 9th step promises. If tempted, we recoil from it from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We find this will have happened automatically. And I love, Bill is just so repetitive in his promises. We'll see that our new attitude is toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. Wow, how did it happen? Think it might have happened somewhere in the early 9 steps? Promise, it just comes. That is the miracle of it. Miracle, something can't be explained. You do the work and it just shows up. Chris talked about it last night. You do the work, you can't stop these promises from coming true. They're coming. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. That's how I feel. I never, ever, 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 ever think about putting something in my body as a solution to my problems today. I think about drinking. I'm an alcoholic. I'm supposed to think about it, but I never think about it as a solution. Big difference. Not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. There's Bill again, third time. It doesn't exist for us, fourth time. We're neither cocky or we're afraid. This is our experience, the early fellowship. It's how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And that's what he's going to take us into. Up to this point, the text has taken our will away and told us that we had to align our wills with God's will. And then it goes on to say, how can I best serve thee? This is the 10th step prayer. Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. And here we give our will back. It says we can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish is the proper use of the will. We're going to go into step 11. It suggests prayer and meditation. It said we shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than us are using it constantly. And it goes on, it says, it would be easy to be vague about this matter. Yet we believe, anytime they use the word we or us, they're talking about the first 100. Yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Basically what they're saying here is you develop your own prayer life. I don't know what Samantha prays or Arner. I have had to develop it over time, and I've sought out prayer method from various religious sects and people that I perceive to be spiritual. And I've landed in some strange places with some strange people on this path, trust me. I mean, I've invited people into my house with their belief systems, and I wanted to cut their throats before they left, but I'm a seeker is the point I'm trying to make, because the book says we seek through prayer and meditation to do what? Improve our conscious contact with God. In 1995, I encountered a couple of gals that had probably 15 years sobriety at the time, and I watched them in meetings. I saw them all the time, and they were best friends, and they always just seemed so happy, so grounded, so plugged in, and I finally approached them one night, and I said, what are you guys doing? I mean, what are y'all doing? And they just seemed to be ecstatically happy, not goofy, but happy. And through a series of conversations that happened over a month or so, I discovered that they had both gone to the Unity Church. Unity is pretty much a neutral way to worship, and it somewhat lines up with this belief system in our book. And what they had discovered, there was a recovered alcoholic Unity minister named Jack Bolin out in Missouri. And Jack took a theory out of Matthew that says, where two or more of you are gathered, I'm there also. And he took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and he boiled them down to 8. And he put it into a book called Mastermind Principle. And these ladies had been prayer partners and sober for 15 years. And they met routinely, once a week, and they would pray together. So I'm interested. And I said, would you hook me up with this? And they said, you betcha. And so they bought me the book, and I'm sponsoring a guy named Greg, and we get together, and we look at the book. We kind of study it a little bit. We cherry-picked it. And we put together a prayer format. And for the last 17 years, I've routinely had a prayer partner, not the same one. The one I've got now is my book study partner, Christian. And we routinely pray every Thursday night at 7:30 at before our home group meeting. And other men join us. Now, this isn't a Jesus Christ thing. This is God as you understand him. I hold these men's hands every Thursday night. And I know the belief systems of some of these men are Catholics, and some of them are Baptists, and some of them are Buddhists, and doesn't matter. I've been holding Christian's hand for 6 years, praying in this circle. I have no idea who or what he's praying to. Never ask, don't care, and will never ask him. It's none of my business. Here's what I can tell you to be fact. He has a God in his life that's manifested in every step he takes because he's growing and blowing, baby. He's hooked up. God as we understand him. And I share that with you, not trying to sell you my belief system because I could care less. I'm telling you what worked for me. I'm a seeker. And I've sought all my life through all sorts of religious disciplines. And where I landed is here. Is this going to stay? Hell, I don't know. But it's working today. It ain't broke, and I'm not going to quit doing it for a minute. I had a man ask me if he could come and do morning meditation in the morning. You betcha. And I'm going to turn him onto this prayer method. Hell, I don't know. But this is because I want to grow. I don't want to stay where I'm at. We doing okay? Where am I at?
41 minutes.
So far? Damn. In this particular section of the book, there's 7 prayers in 2 pages. So do you think they think that might be important? Again, I come down somewhat hard on the fellowship because the fellowship is giving us some improper information. It absolutely goes against what's in this book. It ain't in this book. I got guys that come to me and I say, tell me about the program. Because these guys have been around for a minute. And they say, well, I do this and I do that. And I'm a third step, make prayer and meditate. And I do a written 10th step every night. I say, really? Where's that in the book? 10th step ain't a nighttime deal. 10th step's a walking around step. That's a daytime deal. The 11th step is a nighttime deal, according to my book. I don't know about the Icelandic version, but that's what this version says. Because it says, when we retire at night, 11th step, we constructively, not destructively, God, I wish I hadn't done that. I hit that guy's car door. No, constructively. What did I do that was good? Review my day. Now, if you want to write out this inventory at night, cool, go with it. Been around here for a minute. I can turn on the machine and I can look at my day just like a projector. And I go, oh, I shouldn't have done that. You know, I constructively look at my day. This is the daily deal. And you ask these questions, were you resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which we should have discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? And then ask, were we into the old behavior? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life. Morning. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. We pray. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. Continue step 11 in the morning. It says, upon awakening, we think about the 24 hours ahead. I've actually pulled some excerpts from these two pages and put it into a morning prayer that I sometimes exercise. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, this isn't after you've had the coffee and checked your emails. Before we begin, we pray, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life, here's a promise, will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. I don't know what you've heard since you've been sitting in this room for the last 2 days, but what we've been talking about is the problems here is our thinking. We got flawed thinking. Wrong motives. Thinking about our day, we're still home. We may face some decision, not sure what I'm going to do. We may not be able to determine which course to take, and here we pray again. We ask God for inspiration or an intuitive thought or decision. And Bill has referred to this vital sixth sense up to this point. Here's the sixth sense. What used to be the hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Things that used to just throw me in a tailspin, all of a sudden I go, oh, wow. I get, yeah. You ever have that happen? You just know that this is the right thing to do, and you wonder, damn, I wonder where that came from. Because at this point, you've hooked up with God. Are y'all over there talking about me again? That's what they do. We usually conclude this period of meditation with a prayer, again, that we be shown throughout the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially from freedom for self-will, and are careful never to make no request for ourselves. Only, here you go, we may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. I'm going to wrap up 11 by telling you a story. And I might not get through this without spewing a few tears. A guy named Paul Hill. Paul, shaved head, inked up, teeth broken out. He carried the large print big book. This guy was a thumper from hell. He would go into these discussion meetings, and I'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, Paul has had his driving privilege denied and taken away, and he's riding a bicycle, and he's stocking shelves at a grocery store. He comes to me. I'm sponsoring him. He says, they're about to give me my license back. He says, I got to jump through some hoops. I said, what does that mean? He says, well, I got to get an interlock device, one of these deals you got to blow in before your car will start. That's going to cost him several hundred dollars. He's got to buy this expensive insurance. He's got to go and pay the fine at the state level. Plus, he's got to go to this DUI, driving while intoxicated, school, which is another several hundred dollars. I said, well, listen, before you begin this process, why don't we do this? Why don't you go to the Driver's License Bureau first and see what they say? This really happened. This is going to blow your mind. Don't think this is going to happen to you. It could. This is an extreme deal. So Paul goes down Friday afternoon to the state driver's license thing, and Paul is not your picture of a model citizen, you get me? I mean, he looks like he's ready to take out a machine gun and mow down the office. He goes up, and he asks this lady, he says, my name's Paul Hill. I need you to look me up and tell me what I got to do to get my license. She says, that'll be $35. He says, excuse me? She says, it's $35. He says, you got the wrong guy. She says, is your address da-da-da-da-da? He says, yeah. He says, can't be. She says, do you want your license or not, sir? He says, hang on. So he leaves, he walks across, he calls me up. He says, Larry, she wants to give me my license for $35. And I said, Paul, take the license. He says, But I said, no, there's no buts. You've fallen through some bureaucratic red tape. Take the license. He goes back over the window. He says, ma'am, I don't mean to be a pain. He says, but would you look at that again? She said, Paul Hill, $35. He gives her $35. She hands him his license. He calls me. He says, I got my license. I said, cool. So he comes to the book study that night. And I said, okay, now you've saved a bunch of money. You don't have to have an interlock device. You don't have to go buy this and go through that. I said, do you have a car? He said, no, I don't have a car. I said, well, let me ask you something. If you had a car, what would you do with it? He says, I'd go out to the spin drives and load it up with drunks and take them to book studies. I said, go home tonight and ask God for a car. He says, I can do that. I said, yeah, go do that. So this is on a Monday night. He got his license on Friday. Paul went to a meeting on Tuesday morning, the Breakfast Club meeting at 7 a.m. at the Howe Place. He runs into a guy there he hadn't seen in 15 years prior to his recovery. The guy walks up, man, I'm so glad to see you. Can't believe we're both sober. How's things? He said, well, you know, bicycle, grocery store, drunk driving. Tells him the story. And he tells him, so I got my license back Friday. The guy says, do you need a car? He says, well, as a matter of fact, I do. He says, well, my wife and I just bought a new Honda, and we got this little Civic four-door. Why don't you come get it? And Paul said, how much? He says, no. He says, just come get it. Paul says, what's wrong with it? He says, nothing. It runs great. We just didn't want to trade it in because it's been part of the family for so long. Paul goes over and gets his free car. God gives him a car. Tuesday night, he got the car that morning. Tuesday night, there's no interlock device. There's no DUI school. He's free. He drives up to the book study. It's a little Honda Civic four-door. It parks. All four doors open. It looks like a fucking clown car. Drunks popping out everywhere. And everybody that knew the story were just in tears because we saw God manifested in this young man's life. He came up to me crying and he said, I named the car. I said, what's her name? He said, Lois. Him and Lois, that's all they did is they picked up drunks and they took them to spin drives. They'd go into detoxes and carry this message. Paul called me up about a week later and he said, I got to get some tires. I said, what's wrong with your tires? He says, I'm having flats. I said, really? Tell me about it. He said, well, I've been going to the 7 o'clock meeting at the Howe Place with these meeting makers and middle of the roaders, and he said, I come out in the parking lot, my damn tires are flat. I said, really? So this happened two or three times, and I said, you know, far be it from me, but why don't we try this before you go to the expense of buying tires? I said, why don't you change meetings and see if your tires will hold air? He quit going to the Hawk place trying to shove the book up their ass, and the damn tires quit going flat. We live in a radical society in the South, man. Don't come in here with your book, you know. Last prayer. Actually, the last two prayers. As we go through the day, we've left the house. We pause when agitated. It's going to happen. I don't know about your country. We've got 50 times more people in my town than you've got in your country. We got 20 lanes of traffic. And if you make the decision to get out there, good luck. Stay away from handguns. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful, and we pray. We ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Remember we turned our will and our life over? Way back when. Humbly saying to ourselves, prayer, many times each day, thy will be done. 11th step promise. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. Bada bing, bada boom. Thank you.